Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
High upon the gallows tree, swing the noble hearted tree, by the vengeful tyrants stricken in their bloom. But they met them face to face with the courage of the race, and they went with swords undaunted to their doom. God save Ireland, says the heroes. God save Ireland, says the all. And whether on the scaffold high or the battlefield we die, no matter when for Ireland dear we fall. Rise they up the rugged stair, rang the voices out and stare. The wings fatal cord around thy neck, close beside the gallows tree, kissed like brothers lovingly, to the home of faith and freedom, to the last freedom.
Welcome to Free State, everybody. Joe bet me that I could open in a different way, but unfortunately, when I'm put on the spot, the humanoid only moves in one direction, pre-programmed direction.
Even though, for the listener, he's just eaten a giant packet of Haribos.
Full sour mix on the way in.
Paddy Heaney, who like yourself doesn't drink anymore and is very ferocious with his, you know, sobriety. I took him to match one time down in Navan. There we were playing Meath, and he made me stop in the spa and he bought a giant bag of maybe like packet of Rollo, you know, a Dairy Milk, a giant packet of Maltesers, giant packet of, you know, chewy sweets. I'd say he must have eaten 7 or 8 bags of sweets.
I have no off switch.
That must be it. I was astonished. Yeah. I mean, I sat there in wonder, wondering when he was going to go into a hypoglycemic fit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
you know, then you're like, oh God, what's wrong with me? Something's wrong.
Because it couldn't be good for you, all that sugar. Yeah. But I don't know if you noticed today, but the strangest headline of the year award goes to, did you read this one?
No.
In papers yesterday. Putin pardons two cannibals who joined Russia's war in Ukraine. The fuck is that all about?
I missed that. What?
Two cannibals.
Oh God. But he's pardoned them, but they're pardoned of cannibalism.
I'm presuming that at some stage in the past they've eaten someone to merit the title cannibal.
Yeah.
Bizarre. What a bizarre world we live in, you know.
And, how are you anyway?
Well, not too bad. You know, it's very distressing Thursday. You know, I walked right into the middle of that carnage off Parnell Street.
Hmm.
And, it was very, very distressing.
You were very distressed when I talked to you on Thursday.
I don't
evening.
Want to talk too much about the detail of it because, I'll have to... You know, may have to make a statement, give evidence, or something. Mm. But it was very distressing, and but some of the fascinating things that happened that I will talk about were, you know, this small child, very just a small, small wee child, you know, on the steps, completely lifeless. I mean, she was completely lifeless throughout the whole period. And a young man beside me, very determinedly, ferociously, giving her the kiss of life, infusing her lungs with oxygen, you know, absolutely determined that this child would live. And when the paramedics arrived, I mean, she was just a wee scoot, you know, just like a wee rag doll. Mm. The paramedics arrived, and you know, and then they're around her. Chest compressions, you know, the pad on her chest. It's just a small wee slit to the side of her heart. And then the fire brigade arrived, the big firemen, you know. It's like, you know, and they're all so powerful. And there they are, around this tiny human being, about 8 people,
yeah,
fighting to save this precious human life. And, you know, then they so obviously the girl was the classroom assistant who'd been stabbed and who was quite composed and all to start with, and then she started to struggle for breath. But it was a watch, and then they took her inside because they were going to obviously try the defibrillator, you know. And I mean, the child was just completely lifeless. And obviously what has happened is that the fella who refused to stop infusing her lungs has kept her oxygenated enough for the defibrillator to spark her wee heart back to life. But, you know, it was an illustration of how precious a human life is. And, you know, then the ambulance arrives, the police car in front of the ambulance, you know. This whole humane system that we have built up swings into life to save this small child's life and the classroom assistant's life. And one of the most extraordinary things that happened was that the gentleman who had carried out the knife attack, he was then himself attacked and disarmed. And he then was injured. He was bleeding out from his mouth. And people were starting to become alert to what had happened. Because it's very confusing when you come around that, because there's throngs of people, you know, and you can see movement. But I think that probably the motorcyclist was the only person who saw it properly, because he was coming parallel.
Right.
To the attacker, coming down towards, you know, the main O'Connell Street sort of boulevard. Yeah. And so two fellas had engaged him. Then three women, formed a cordon, a protective cordon, knowing that he was the attacker, formed a protective cordon around him and stoutly defended him, refused to let anyone near. And their presence diffused all of that. And again, it was a testimony to the goodness of people, you know, what people are really like.
Mm.
When we're recording this, the baby's still alive and fighting for life. And we just hope that that precious life is sustained. And what a triumph that would be to come out of this catastrophe.
Yeah. No, it's shocking whenever you're around something like that, how much of it seems to be almost in within the tram lines of normal day-to-day behavior. Like you would expect, like obviously there are some things like explosions. And
I just want to get a sandwich. I was strolling back in my normal sort of lunchtime days thinking, because I was due to make a speech that night at a poverty conference. And I mean, it was very, it was all very vivid. And the child, you know, was so reminiscent of those horrific images that are coming out of Gaza, you know, these lifeless small children like that. And, you know, what happened afterwards then, you know, the rioting and the hate movement coming out. And, you know, this sort of fantasy of the other that's peddled.
Hmm.
And I thought watching it, you know, that this dehumanization of the other, you know, in this case, it's immigrants, often with these people, it's this conspiracy that they're trying to replace the Irish sort of bloodline, all of that nonsense. And I recall that when Matthew Collins came into us, the recovered neo-Nazi, who's now sort of a leading light in the Hope Not Hate movement and has infiltrated these neo-Nazis and is very interested in what's happening in Ireland. He said, hatred's not a political problem. You know, it's a psychological one, existing only in the mind of the hater. You know, I mean, in his case, you'll recall that he said to us, Dion, I mean, if we had a problem, go and smash somebody in the face with a hammer. Something's not being done on the roads, smash somebody in the face with a hammer. And, you know, this hatred was unleashed again with those riots. And, I mean, one of the, and they're all called, you know, all these anonymous trolls, they're all called like Glow Rogan and God Emperor and things like that. You know, obviously people with inadequacies leading sort of a fantasy life. I mean, Dermot Devlin, who's a champion of human rights in the North, you know, and Dermot is severely disabled and wheelchair bound, and a person of great integrity. And these haters started to attack him because he tweeted that the rioters in Dublin were exploiting the knife attack at the nursery to spread hatred and violence, that there was no link between these things. And they started to subject him to the most sickening abuse. You fucking gnome. Shut your mouth, you cunt gnome. You cunt dwarf. You know. And I think that there's a very important role being played by Elon Musk and the other social media magnates who have allowed all of this stuff to flourish. This all should be shut down. You know, people should have to reveal their identity.
Well, that's true, but I think there's actually, it's also important at this stage to distinguish between Elon Musk, who is now kind of adjacent to fascists, and the other social network owners.
No, but all the social networks are exactly the same. Well, I mean, they're not being policed. People are allowed to be anonymous. You know, and it's like, it doesn't matter to someone like me, but I just thought of how hurtful that must have been for Dermot being attacked in that way. You know,
but I think this is one of the things,
and it's done gleefully, and I think that, you know, I watched a documentary recently called Ordinary Men, and it was based on a book written by Christopher Browning, a historian who researched the book with sort of renowned psychologists, psychiatrists, historians from Germany around the world. And they researched what they call the forgotten Holocaust. And that was, you know, the 2 million, mostly Jewish people, who were murdered in mass shootings by firing squads. I mean, these firing squads would start in the morning, early in the morning, and finish at night, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and this was like going out for a day's work. One of the themes of Ordinary Men, and it's on Netflix now, and I recommend it. I recommend it to anyone because it's an illustration of how ordinary people can, if the state dictates it, you know, and if there's a sufficient swell of hatred and there's sufficient media coverage and there's sufficient lack of education of our kids, etc., how this can become the norm. One of the most striking things that happened with that Reserve Police Battalion 101, which is who he documented, their first massacre was in June 1941. And that day, they shot Jewish people one by one. You know, a soldier would take a Jewish person and shoot them. They shot 1,500 people in a day, this one battalion. And it became so normal. The most striking thing being that they didn't have to do it. That's what all the research, because they compiled very detailed reports by the week, sent them to Central Command, and none of them were under compulsion to do it. Not a soldier was ever shot or disciplined for refusing to shoot a Jewish person in those mass shootings. But they all did it. And a police captain, a Julius Woolhoff, who was university educated, as Christopher Browning said, this guy could discuss Mozart or Beethoven with you. He brought his new wife on their honeymoon to Poland to be at his side as he triumphantly carried out the clearing of the Mydrzyk ghetto. That was 11,000 Jews. And his wife was present as he proudly took part in the mass shootings that followed, lining defenseless Jewish men, women and children up and murdering them. 1,000 were shot there and then, and the remaining 10,000 were packed onto the death trains to Treblinka. And he beamed proudly through it. He was doing his duty for the fatherland. And that was his honeymoon.
You see, the thing I think about that, and it's, you know, it is when you see what happened in America, when you see what happened, you know, even elections in the Netherlands, you see Argentina, you see these places, you know, these far right movers. But fascism...
And all it is hate. All it is hate.
But there's also, there are people being part of that movement and voting. And like, this is the thing, this is the thing that kind of weakens people's sort of resolve about it in some ways. Because they say, people say, well, you know, 75% of people in Ireland say they think there's too much immigration or something. So that actually, they can't all be far right. And that's fair enough. They can't, because people have questions and people have, have concerns, which can be dealt with. But the point is that at the head of these things, at the head of these movements, there is always a fascist drive that is bringing people towards, as you say, those objects of hate, those things that they should hate, rather than looking at stuff that are maybe, you know, the real reasons for you know, structural inequality and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's a distraction. Yeah,
but equally, it's important. It's very important when you see it. Like, up until about 2:07 on January the 6th, there were still people saying, oh, you know, it's very simplistic to be referring to Donald Trump as a fascist. You know, and suddenly, they're running into the Capitol building,
laughing at disabled people. Yeah, you know, making jokes at his friend, you know, talking about white supremacists, boasting about, you know, grabbing women by the pussy and, you know, sexual assaults and all those sorts of things. I mean, all of these people seem to have very decadent moral codes. But I mean, I thought of the German police captain when I saw during the week, Major Moshe Grunberg, of the Israeli Defense Forces, making a special birthday video for his 2-year-old daughter by blowing up a Palestinian school that was deserted. And all his colleagues cheered. The video was posted. Happy birthday, darling. I love you. I'll be home soon. And it emphasized what Gideon Levy said, that if you subject people to sufficient propaganda over a period of time and the state subscribes to that propaganda, ordinary people are capable of anything. And, you know, I thought that we might sort of trace through. I mean, one of the striking things about the Police Battalion 101 was that they saw themselves as victims. You know, it was the government of Germany that had decreed this. It was lawful. So, you know, very, very few of them are psychopaths. You know, they had eminent psychiatrists reviewing all of the records. Many of them are still alive. Many of them gave evidence at the Nuremberg hearings. But what was most astonishing was the speed of the public process of dehumanizing the Jewish people. I mean, it was absolutely astonishing how quickly ordinary Germans became conditioned to mass murder. And very soon, they saw nothing wrong with it. You know, and I mean, the key was that they were able to interpret orders in a way that was acceptable for them, because human beings are very flexible and we're survivors. And if we're in a situation like that, we're very, very capable of adapting. You know, I mean, one officer said that he would only shoot children because if the parents were already dead, the child had little chance anyway. So that was his moral justification for that. You know, he killed thousands of children. And that was all he killed. You know. And when I saw on Friday the neo-Nazi and Britain First leader Paul Golding You know, and those there, the guys who were Matthew Collins, you know, they idolise Hitler. Mm. Their anthem is Horst Wessel Lied, Hitler's favourite song and the anthem of the Third Reich. Cheering on the Dublin riots, encouraging more of the same, and tweeting, Conor McGregor should call a freedom march in Dublin. A freedom march? Hundreds of thousands will turn up. The people of Ireland will be solidly behind him. Ireland is full. Ireland belongs to the Irish. Fucking Paul Golding, a staunch supporter of loyalist paramilitaries, and of course, convictions for woman beating. And he's the new idol of Irish patriots. Ireland's for the Irish. He flew Dion to Belfast. I remember this for the 2015 loyalist riots. And I just happened to dig up a headline. Neo-Nazi Paul Golding in Belfast for loyalist flag protests, which have led to outbreaks of... Just get this for similarity. For outbreaks of serious violence, death threats against politicians, and heavy financial loss for traitors. That is not exactly what happened on O'Connell Street.
Yeah.
On Friday. And this is the guy cheering on the Dublin riots and inciting Conor McGregor. His ex-partner, Jada Franson, was awarded $75,000 after he was found to have beaten her and physically abused her. And as Matthew Collins told us, it's just hate and it's transferable.
Well, it's completely transferable. And that's the thing. That's the, and again, when we talk about it, it is important to frame it in terms of, like, I don't care how little people like it when you say far right or you say fascist or whatever, because...
Hate, I think, is maybe better.
Well, yeah, let's call it, but the point I'll make about it, and fascism, one of the properties it shares with sort of any kind of any nostalgia is you can see it clearly for what it is at a distance, you know? So people feel uncertain in the present day and they feel worried and they feel unsure about things. But when they get past it, they look back and they go, oh, that was a wonderful time. Fascism kind of is in reverse, you know. You look back in history and go, this is when we were demonizing the Jews. This is when we were demonizing Asian people. This is when we were demonizing blacks. This is when, you know, the National Front were marching. But at the time, hate and fear go hand in hand. So hate has risen up in people through their fears.
But you need somebody to exploit it. Somebody has to come along. A Nigel Farage or a British National Party.
But let
party.
Me finish this point, Joe. Like, what happens is, at that point, and Ireland is at that point now where people look around and they feel fearful and they see the other and they can have something then to hate, right? And yet there is nothing to fear. And there is nothing to hate.
But it's such, Dion, it's such a tiny minority. I mean, you get someone, right, like a sort of a self-interested, really moron, you know, like Conor McGregor, right? He tweeted, Ireland, we are at war. That's what he tweeted. Now, what does that mean? That led to open season, in my view, and I've made a communication to the guards about this. He is guilty of incitement to hatred under the legislation. And I mean, what else would it be other than an incitement to young men to come and get stuck in?
Well,
you know,
the other thing is this is
a guy who punched an elderly man in Dublin pub because he refused the offer of a drink. You know, a true Irish patriot who shut down a family run barbershop in Dublin after 70 years when he tripled their rent, you know. And to be fair to him, he has walked the walk when it comes to attacking buses. That's true. And do you not remember when his fight with Khabib?
I do.
He rampaged with his entourage through the Barclays Centre, through a metal railing through the window of Khabib's bus. His entourage vandalised their buses, injured several people, threw bins and various missiles, and he got community service and very steep compensation orders. But his contributions are typical of wealthy haters. Now, he's just not very smart. First, stir it up. Ireland, we are at war. What a load of crap that is, right? Mm-hmm. Dublin's an unbelievably multicultural city. I travel safely there all the time. You know, obviously this was a very, very distressing, very, very unusual incident that happened. We're at war with whom? And then when it kicks off, and I didn't see Conor down there, I didn't see Connor down there with the Irish Patriots getting stuck in. Despicable scenes last night, he says. And what does he do? He uses two pictures. Jeez, he must have had to do some work to find two pictures of non-whites looting. Mm. You know, and you've got the Britain First leader cheering it on, and you've got, I notice all the senators are quiet. But there's a bit coming from gripped, and they're just being very circumspect at the minute because they're sort of, what they do is they incite it, they build it up, they love to see it happening, and then they say, well, now that was really quite out of order, and that really shouldn't have happened. Aim is to destabilize democracy.
Let's ask some questions. Let's have a debate. Let's have all these things. But the other thing, you see, the other point about this. And you talk about it being a small group of people. That's fine, right? But it doesn't take many, okay? It doesn't take many. And it doesn't take many then to stoke fears, A, within people who look around and are concerned, you know, whatever they're concerned about.
Yeah.
But B, the other thing, and I listened to RT...
I mean, the city was empty on Friday morning.
But I listened to RT Radio on Friday afternoon coming out of town. And... it was so sad to hear people, you know, black and Asian people who live in Dublin talking about how they didn't want to go into the city. You know, they went home, or they were told not to go into the city, or they were told to stay away. And that's like, and I think there's been a huge upsurge in defiance from most Irish people because of stuff like that, because they know that isn't who we want to be. But at the same time, that you're talking about people living in this city, contributing to this country, who are saying that's how they felt. And that's why you can write it off as a small minority in some ways, and you're right.
I'm not writing it off.
No, but you can say, okay, you can
but I don't, want, say, I don't want. I don't want to sort of give it undue
no, but what significance. But the fear.
You know, they burned a bus, they burned a Lewis. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's very visible. The pictures shoot around the world. The senators who are interested in this stuff, the grips, all of those, they're sitting back. You can see this is all going the right way because the purpose is, and we've seen it in America and we've seen it very starkly in the UK, we'll come to that, is to destabilize democracy. You distract poor people from the real issues and causes of inequality. And instead of, for example, poor people going out and joining one of the grassroots political movements, getting involved in social activism, you know, they then riot, attack, loot. They're the ones who go to prison. You know, their families have to pick up the pieces, ruins whatever future they and their kids might have. And it's entirely self-defeating. It's just a circle of hatred, which is precisely what the elites want. You know, you manufacture a Brexit, you know, by othering the foreigner and othering the Ukrainians and all the rest of it. You know, it degenerates into vileness and it sets people at each other's throats. Or even if the perception is that it's degenerated into vileness, that is precisely the direction that they want to send us in. And the foot soldiers, they go.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
prison. But it's all a fantasy. None of it's real. I mean, Suella Braverman, the darling of the far right in the UK, she said, right, multiculturalism has failed. And she's a big stump the boats woman. Her mother is Uma Mutiam Pillai, a Hindu Tamil from Mauritius of Indian parents. She was recruited by the NHS as a nurse and brought to the UK. Her father is Christy Fernandez, a Kenyan of Goan descent. She's the niece of the Mauritian High Commissioner, Mahin Kundasamy. She studied in France. She studied in France. And she's married to Rael Braverman, who is devoutly Jewish. She was the Home Secretary. The Prime Minister is a Hindu of Indian origin. His parents, Dion, are Yashvir and Usha, who are both Hindus. Usha was born in Tanganyika in Southeast Africa, and Yashvir was born in Nairobi, Kenya. And his wife, Akshata Murthy, is the daughter of the Indian billionaire Narayana Murthy. Priti Patel. Her paternal grandparents were born in Gujarat, India, before emigrating to Uganda. Her parents then were immigrants from Uganda. Sajid Javid. I mean, he's a son of Pakistani Punjabi immigrants to the UK. His family were farmers from the village of Rajana near Tobak Tek Singh in Punjab. You know, and Kwasi Kwarteng, the guy who crashed the pound. his parents emigrated from Ghana in the 60s. James Cleverly, the current Home Secretary, he's a big stop the boats man. His mother's from Sierra Leone in West Africa. And they're all saying, stop the boats. They're all saying that the peace marches in relation to Gaza are hate marches. Because hate is profitable. I mean, Suella Braverman's talking about an invasion of immigrants. Protect our children from Pakistani grooming gangs. Stop the boats. I mean, one of these haters tweeted me yesterday to say, what about the million children who've been raped by Pakistani grooming gangs? I must have missed that. You know, and I don't know if you remember, it will always stick in my mind, Joan Salter, who's a Holocaust survivor, she confronted Braverman over her rhetoric. And she said to her, when I hear you using words like swarms and invasion, I am reminded of the language used to dehumanize and justify the murder of my family and millions of others. Because this playbook, Dion, you know, and I've read very carefully George Macari's masterwork of Fear and Strangers, A History of Xenophobia, is exactly the playbook that we see with these Irish haters now, that was used by the Nazis, that was used before them by the British Empire. You know, that Indian people were monkeys and wogs and, you know, deformed, vile creatures and, you know, all of the dehumanization. And it's precisely the language that's been used in America and the UK. And now, as we've warned before, and as Matthew Collins warned us in our podcasts, this movement is burgeoning. Drew Harris, in my view, has made an error in light touch with them. There should be no light touch with hatred. You know, the social media companies have got to be forced to introduce a code where people have to give their names and details, just the way you would have to do when you're, you know, doing anything else legitimate online. And the interesting thing about Braverman, right, who's a horrendous racist, as you know, but systematically and deliberately for her political career, in her maiden speech in the House of Commons, and I looked it up, her maiden speech, she talked about hoping that our marriage with Europe remains a happy and prosperous one in the decades ahead. If I succeed in making some small contribution during my time, it will reflect only a fraction of my gratitude to this country for the abundance of education, culture, and traditions that have made it great, for the tolerance and fellowship of the British people, and for the opportunities and liberties that my parents were allowed to enjoy. And under the current asylum scheme, her parents wouldn't even be allowed into Britain. And but so
she clearly decided that that wasn't the wasn't politic.
She's going to earn a fortune, and then she calls the peace marches hate marches. She encouraged the far right out onto the streets of London. Let's say
She's the Paul Golding. She's the Conor McGregor, right? Mm. She encouraged the far right onto the streets of London whenever the peace marches were going nowhere near the cenotaph. So you have 500,000 people going to peace marches. Not a single arrest on the day. Mm. 2,000 far right thugs. A lot of soccer hooligans who have been identified and arrested. And of course, members of the Orange Order went on to attack the cenotaph. Attacked police officers violently. Tommy Robinson's people broke through police lines 2 minutes before the minute silence at the cenotaph. Tommy Robinson tweeted this. Yeah. Mm. And you translate this to Conor McGregor in Ireland. Patriots, we must gather tomorrow to protect the cenotaph. Britain is at war. And a large group chanting, "You're not English anymore," at the police, you know. And then the Home Secretary washes her hands of it.
The thing about this, and the thing, and
because hatred in the UK is mainstream now.
Yeah, but the other thing about this is why, and you're right about social media, but it's also a way of amplifying and magnifying issues and concerns and incidents, you know. So like we see all the time, if there's violence now, we know about it. If there's something caught on somebody films something, everybody knows about it, whether it's WhatsApp or Twitter or whatever. So everybody's concerns are magnified. And when it comes to issues like this, this is why, like when people say, we need to have an open debate now about this. And you're like, open debate about what? What do you want? What are you talking about? Because I was talking to somebody about this the other day who works in this area. And he was like, what is the issue? If you want to have an open debate about immigration, like what is, say if you do, we said, what's the issue? There's no shortage of jobs.
No.
Right? You know, 1 in 5 of the people working in this country are you know, born outside Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, they're coming in, they're working all the time. You saw the, like, there was a great tweet from somebody about, you know, I was jumped on by 3 immigrants today.
See what Dr. Harold News said? He said 5 out of 5 Irish people abroad are immigrants.
Well, that's...
5 out of 5 Irish people working abroad are immigrants.
Well, you know, like, and we talked about... Yeah, but the other point is about this is, like, what is the debate you want to have? Like, there is no real debate. There is possibly something to be concerned about in terms of how slow Irish bureaucracy moves to actually ensure that services are available to people. But that isn't a reason for demonizing the other. But also, this is the thing, even in times that aren't as wild and as kind of contentious as now, it's always been the case everywhere that, for example, people overestimate the percentage of, say, immigrants in their country.
Yeah.
Like if you, any poll, and I'm looking at a poll from 2010, every country, United States, it was 40, if you ask people what percentage of the population are immigrants, 40% is what people said. The reality was 14%. Canada, 40%, reality, 20%. Britain, 30%, reality, 11%. And people are always imagining these things. And it doesn't take much in a time of uncertainty for people to stoke that and to people to kind of create some sense that everything is in jeopardy because of the way the country is changing. Now, I always thought, and one of the most naive ideas I've ever had was I always thought we were protected from the kind of nostalgic trip that Britain and America could go down about, you know, we want to go back to, you know, warm pints of bitter and cricket on the village green stuff and, you know, make America great again, because we could so demonstrably remember that, like, the 1950s and 1950s Ireland, you know, dominated by the Catholic Church, really a repressive place to live. Nobody could actually start harking back to that.
Yeah.
But you're beginning to see it. You're beginning to see it. People are, you know, people are talking about, oh, you know, wasn't that bad a time? You know, lots of good art was created in that time. You know, there was, you know, people managed to create things. You know, there were some great writers appeared. Every great writer appeared, drank himself to death. Yeah. You know what I mean? But maybe that wasn't the fault of the Church or of Ireland. But it's funny that is out there too, and that is out there because that will then get into people's heads that actually, yeah, no, Ireland was a nicer, simpler, safer place when you know, millions of people, when our population was stagnating. Like, the reality on just, you know, facts don't really matter, as Matthew Collins has pointed out.
Facts,
but like, reality is,
you smash
like,
him in the face with a hammer. Like,
did you see that there was a thing recently where they showed if Ireland's population had increased since 1845 at the same rate as England had in the same period, there'd be 26 million people living here.
Yeah,
you know, we're not full. No, it's really not full.
It's a fantasy.
Never till the latest day shall the memories pass away from the gallant lives just given for this land. But on the cosmos go to the joy and weal and woe to make this nation free and so grand. God save Ireland, says the heroes. God save Ireland, says the all. And whether on the scaffold high or the battlefield we die, no matter when for Ireland.